Well, hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
So we have lots to talk about this week. There have been some major developments in Wisconsin's voter purge case, but we got to figure out what on-the-nose musical reference we're going to use to sort of tie everything together.
Okay, so we should probably pick one of the developments that happened in court this week. There were a few, so maybe we should focus in on the appeals court stay. So for the music, we could play Taylor Swift's 2014 classic, All You Had to Do Was Stay.
I don't know, Sean. I feel like that's like a really obvious choice, like amateur night, Taylor Swift song.
You mean spot
like,
on.
No, let's go back further for the real T-Swift fans to like 2012 from her album Red. The song is Stay, Stay, Stay. It has three stays.
Okay, so she says it three times. Therefore, it's better.
Yeah. And it's deeper. It's a deeper cut. I think our audience will appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Laurel, but that's really going back to country Taylor Swift, and she's evolved so much as an artist since
then. So true.
Plus, we play Taylor all the time. I'm going to throw out a little bit of a dark horse here. What if we go with Lisa Loeb's 1994 hit, Stay?
Oh, man. Lisa Loeb totally tugs at the heartstrings for me. I hate to say no to that, but she only says stay once in that song. So I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe we could play all three?
That's what I was hoping you would say.
Okay, good.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we talk about stays and everything else in Wisconsin's voter purge case. So if you made it through that horribly contrived intro, thank you for staying with us.
Good, good.
You're going to hear a lot of interesting analysis.
This is going to be one of those podcasts where you highlight the word stay throughout, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. It is. So where do we want to get started here about Wisconsin's voter purge case?
Okay, so we want to get to the fast-moving legal action here, but I think we have to do some background on the case first, or none of it's going to make any sense if you haven't paid attention to the rest of the case. And there's a good chance you haven't, because up until recently, it wasn't nearly as dramatic as it has become.
Also, we get paid to stay up on this case, while you as a news consumer just do it out of the goodness of your heart.
That's true.
It's true. Pro bono.
Maybe your attention was diverted to another story that didn't have to do with a multi-state system for scanning government databases for address changes.
Yeah. I would say, though, this story has gotten some national attention.
Oh, it has now.
Because it's
about, spicy hot. Yeah.
Potentially removing.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And we are battleground Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, every vote counts. And this story is about 200,000 votes potentially, or at least 200,000 names.
Mm-hmm. Potentially being removed from voter rolls. So since I sort of started with the coverage of this issue,
we have this custody battle going over this story, but go ahead, Laurel.
So I'll give the just really quick, I promise, roundup of what this case is about and when it started. Is that kind of the background we want, John?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lightning round? Okay. So basically, this is a lawsuit brought by the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They say that the Wisconsin Elections Commission has been waiting too long to remove some people from its list of registered voters in Wisconsin, because those people may have moved either in Wisconsin or out of state. So the way the Elections Commission handles that right now is they send postcards to people that are flagged by that database that Sean mentioned earlier, and they say, hey, we think that you may have moved because this database says that you, like, did a vehicle registration, or you filed a change of address form. Some form of government document has you at a different address. Are you still at your address? If so, cool. If not, we're going to like remove you from the voter rolls at this address, right?
In 2021.
In 2021, which is where the hangup is, because the Wisconsin Elections Commission says, you know, this is our policy, 2021.
They voted 5-0 for this policy earlier this year.
And the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty says, hey, there's a state law that says you've got to remove these people within 30 days if they don't respond to your postcard confirming that they still live at this address. So basically, it's about people responding to postcards and how long you wait after their non-response to take them off the list of registered voters in Wisconsin.
Okay. So where did we stand up until this week with this case brought by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty?
Okay. Well, the first thing that happened in this case was December 13th, an Ozaukee County judge, Paul Malloy, rules that the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is, in his view, correct, and that the state of Wisconsin must immediately purge these more than 200,000 names who have been flagged as having potentially moved. The State Elections Commission meets shortly after the judge makes that ruling, and they vote 3-3 on what to do next, meaning they do nothing. Why do they vote 3-3 on what to do next? Because they are split evenly between Republicans and Democrats. And yes, they voted unanimously previously on this issue, but it's gotten a bit more partisan now. And so when this election commission meets, it can't agree. Elections commission meets again. Same outcome, 3-3. They can't decide what to do next. So the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty files a motion before Judge Malloy asking him to find members of the Elections Commission in contempt of court, which would be a very rare step. You just don't see that very often in all of the voting battles that we've had in Wisconsin. You haven't seen that. But
and that would entail, if they're held in contempt of court, it would involve fines,
it
right?
It could involve like fines. Daily. That is something that the judge could impose. They could be up to $2,000 per day per person, which is something that the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty floats
in their
complaint.
Sort of, yeah, their request to the judge to do this thing. So that's where we were on Monday morning, right?
Right.
This request is out to Judge Malloy for the contempt motion.
The Elections Commission remains in limbo. There's no sign that they're going to do anything. So Judge Malloy looks at this motion and says, you know what? Yeah, you are right. I am not happy with the way that the Elections Commission has been dealing with my court order. Here's a direct quote from the judge. If people are free to disregard a court's order, where do you start and stop with that? How do you enforce that? What happens to our justice system if people say that's just one guy's interpretation? What happens when people no longer come to court when they're subpoenaed? Our justice system will cease to work. He's not happy. He fines members of the Elections Commission $250 per day, but not all the members. He fines the Democratic
members.
The members that voted against taking action when the Elections Commission had those meetings and held those votes.
And he fines them $250 per day, not the full $2,000 that he could under the law, but an unusual step.
And then also the commission itself as a whole, $50 a day, right?
Right. I don't know where he came up with that number or what exactly, how exactly you find the commission, but that is the number that he chose.
And it seemed like it sort of, to a certain extent, got under his skin. Like when he was delivering his findings on this, he talked about how he had heard, he didn't specify who, but had heard one of the members of the commission on the radio saying they didn't have to follow the order. And he's saying, no, you have to follow my order.
Yeah. I went back and listened to our stories. I'm like, was it our radio? were you listening to WPR, Judge? I couldn't confirm this, but he was not happy. And so he did take this rare step. So Elections Commission is scheduled to meet the next day. And we all think, well, that'll be the next action in this case, right? Because the judge is taking this rare step now. It's going to be in the commissioner's hands on how to react to this. But Monday evening,
at about 6 o'clock.
Another rare thing happens in this
case. I was
going to
say, like, meanwhile, because something happens Monday evening, but we need to set up what happened Monday evening, because as this stuff in Ozaukee County was going on, there are two other things in other courts that were also going on.
Yes, right. So there are two appeals that are pending at this point in the state court system.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is before the state court of appeals, which is the traditional way that you appeal a case.
They're appealing Judge Malloy's decision.
Yeah, this was an appeal filed by Wisconsin's Department of Justice. They're representing the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and they asked the court of appeals, stay this decision.
Mm-hmm.
Stay.
Stay.
just like T-Swift would
just
say.
Just like T-Swift would say.
Just like Lisa Loeb would say.
That would be... Look, everybody would just break down in tears because Lisa Loeb's so amazing. So there's this other motion out there at the same time, and this is before the state Supreme Court. This was filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Will wants the state Supreme Court to take this appeal directly, bypass the state court of appeals. And so while this is out there, the state court of appeals is keeping hands off. They're like, we're going to wait to see what the Supreme Court does with this.
Mm-hmm. And so this brings us back to Monday evening.
The Supreme Court does something, and it does something that I don't think many of... Okay, we didn't expect this, right? Did anybody in this room expect a 3-3 deadlock on the Wisconsin Supreme Court for this case? I will say I did not, because the Supreme Court has a 5-2... Laurel's just laughing.
Sean is just so jazzed.
I'm just like on a procedural... like.
I just feel like you're just like a rolling train, and you're like, did anybody expect this? I don't know if you expected it, but I did not.
Oh, guys, I just love court cases where there's lots of action. It's so interesting.
I'm sorry, Chad. It's very exciting, and I didn't mean to cut off your train.
Now I'm self-conscious about my interest in this case.
So, 3-3 on a 5-2 ideologically split court.
Yeah, the conservatives have a 5-2 majority on that court. So we already knew going into this case, I'm just going to just say it nonchalant now so Laura won't laugh at me. We already knew that Justice Dan Kelly, who is up for election in April, was not going to hear this case. He had already announced that.
Can we pause for just 1 second?
Mm-hmm.
So Kelly said that he was going to recuse himself from this case because he's on the ballot in April.
So he'd be dealing
with... And he said that, yeah, he would be dealing with a different pool of voters potentially. And so he didn't want to be ruling on a case that would affect his election potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So Kelly's out. You still have a 4-2 conservative majority on the court. But Justice Brian Hagedorn, the newest member of the court, elected mm-hmm. in April of last year, with strong support from the conservative or Republican base, mind you, sides with the court's liberals and decides not to take this case on direct appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 3-3. They're, like the Elections Commission, a 3-3 vote means nothing happens. So they don't take the appeal. So
this
that
is
changes
another
everything.
Argument for my stay, 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 because there are lots of threes cropping up in this podcast this week. I'm just going to say three was a powerful
but
number
weren't
this
there
week.
Actually only two stays that we're talking about?
Okay, there were, but let's not get ahead of ourselves here, because this, this Hagedorn story is interesting,
yeah.
too.
Mm. Because I know you've actually read the opinions here and have
well,
some
they're
things
very brief.
To say about it.
So
I said things to say. You
see,
have some
everyone's
things
doing
to
it
say
now.
About this.
So there's Hagedorn and Justice Rebecca Dallet and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley don't say anything about why they voted the way they did. They're just, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to hear this on a direct appeal. There was a dissent, though, by Justice Rebecca Bradley. Mind you, she is friends with Brian Hagedorn. I mean, when Brian Hagedorn is running for Supreme Court, mm-hmm. Rebecca Bradley's out there campaigning for him. When she was seeking to become a judge, Brian Hagedorn was the governor's appointments director. They know each other pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So her dissent, I sort of imagine it as like an open letter to Justice Hagedorn, mm-hmm. an open letter to Brian, kind of from a friend. She says, in declining to hear a case presenting issues of first impression immediately impacting the voting rights of Wisconsin citizens and the integrity of impending elections, the court shirks its institutional responsibilities to the people who elected us to make important decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was an interesting choice of words there, because you've seen conservatives kind of giving Hagedorn a hard time after this decision. Like, hey, that's not why we sent you there. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk radio, it was Jay Weber that mm-hmm. tweeted about this. He was none too happy that Hagedorn had issued this or had sided with the liberals in this case.
He invited Hagedorn to come on his show and defend his decision.
I just think, you know, you could, there's all sorts of sort of ways you could talk about, you know, have robbed the people of Wisconsin, of a quick decision in this case. But Justice Bradley, one of the court's conservatives, says, like, the people who elected us.
Mm-hmm. And essentially saying you're not serving your constituents, your conservative constituents that elected you to this post.
And she might dispute that characterization.
Sure.
You know, but I think given the totality of the, you know, the rest of the reaction to this ruling, I thought that was interesting. So anyway, there's that. That was a very big and, I was, as we've established, I was not expecting this.
Yeah.
You guys didn't weigh in on it. Whatever.
I wasn't expecting it. I think.
Hey, have you heard? That's me on the street the next day. 3-3. Nobody saw that coming.
Sean just ran out his front door.
And it was Justice Hagedorn, too. Who saw that coming?
Yeah,
I turned into the
George,
town crier.
George Bailey.
Oh, guys. You're just.
Did you hear?
It's a little too accurate, okay? I have a bell. Okay.
Well, okay, so this is a particularly big deal that the Supreme Court isn't going to take this case because it gives the appeals court sort of a new lease on life and it's, you know, addressing of this case.
Yeah, it kind of changes everything.
They've just been like hanging out saying, yeah, you know, we're waiting for whatever the Supreme Court is going to decide. We're not going to stay. We're not going to stay. We're not going to stay. You know.
I didn't follow all that, but I'm going to assume that you were consistent on that.
I was.
Okay.
I did a negative and then I went to a triple negative and then I went to a double negative to cover all my bases there. Just listen back to the tape. So anyway, the Supreme Court hands down this decision, and so it gives the Court of Appeals an opportunity to weigh in themselves.
And so that's where we're at on Tuesday morning when the Elections Commission is meeting at 10 a.m. Like, they come in to meet, and they quickly go into closed session, and everybody's kind of wondering, like, what are they going to do? The Democratic members of this commission have been held in contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to change the way that they vote, or what's the deal? Mm-hmm. And while they went into closed session, the Elections Commission, the Court of Appeals releases two orders. They are stays.
Oh.
It's only two, though.
Just
so it's
two.
Not, it does not fulfill the Taylor Swift prophecy.
It's not the rule of threes.
It's not the rule of threes. One of them is handed down by the entire three-judge panel in this case, and that stays the original ruling by Judge Malloy. The other is handed down by one of the judges, and it stays the contempt order. So it puts it all on hold.
And how is it that the stay of the contempt order is just from one judge?
He said that that's all we got to do under the law, basically. I mean, they were very brief decisions, but
okay,
he said, you know, as is required under, it was either court rules or state law. That's all I got to do. So, and they even said in their stay order, like, we'll explain this later, but because the Supreme Court just ruled last night and the Elections Commission is meeting this morning, we want to get this out here.
That must have been such an interesting morning in the appeals court. Like, hey, we need to do this fast. What's going on with the Elections Commission? They're going into closed session. Like, go, 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 go.
What if it was just an excuse for, like, not getting your homework done? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll just write this later.
We'll say that we can do this later. Yeah.
So I guess my next question is, where do things go from here? The decision from Judge Malloy has been stayed. The contempt ruling from Judge Malloy has been stayed. So then where does this case proceed?
It proceeds in the state court of appeals for now, and it's going to slow down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Dean Knudsen, the chair of the Elections Commission, a Republican chair of the Elections Commission, alluded to when he was talking during the open session of their meeting and also to reporters afterward, was it like, look, there's going to be a briefing schedule and, you know, that you'll have like 30-day time periods in between briefings. And so
the briefings are just basically documents that the two different parties, the plaintiffs and the defendants, prepare for the court to kind of make their arguments.
Yes. Once a case gets to that level, there are kind of finite timelines that are laid out, and it's not going to be as quick as conservatives were hoping. And so when you're looking at like the spring election, very good chance that nothing's going to happen with the voting rolls, that these 200,000 plus names who are identified as having potentially moved, they will stay on the rolls for now.
And, you know, I think, isn't there some speculation that there might not be any change with this even before the November presidential election? Because the appeals court has to go through this whole process, and then it would have to be appealed to the Supreme Court to get there the traditional way. And then they have to do all of their stuff as well.
And there are elections throughout the year. So there's regularly scheduled elections in February, April, August, November. And then there's a special election in the 7th Congressional District in May. And, you know, the Elections Commission was talking about, like, when could we do this next? Because we need some time to send these out and have give people a time to respond. And then if you have a federal election, you have to mail out your ballots earlier than you would have to for just a state election. So there's just not a lot of time windows when you could do this. Couple that with the kind of unknown of what's going to happen in court, and I don't know what's going to happen this year, you know, in terms of whether they will purge the list at any point. I do know that if you are identified on that list and you go to vote, they will ask you if you still live at your address. You know, your name will have like a little watermark. That's how they described it, a watermark next to it. And they will ask you, hey, you still live here? You are identified as having possibly moved. Mm-hmm. If you say yes, sign your name, you're done, basically.
So you'll be able to vote on that day,
yeah,
with that address.
Yeah. The bottom line is these 200,000 names that were kind of up in the air, they're not going anywhere for now.
They're going to stay where they are?
Yes, they are, John. That's good. Good job.
They're going to stay.
Good stay reference.
Stay
golden, Johnny boy.
The whole podcast is leading to that moment.
So I guess just to play this out a little bit, though, when this goes to the state Supreme Court, do you think there would still be a 3-3 decision there?
I mean, if it goes there through a traditional appeal, that's different. I mean, we don't know why Brian Hagedorn sided with Justices Dalit and Ann Walsh Bradley on this initial run-up through the state Supreme Court, but I would expect that if it went to the Supreme Court through a traditional appeal, it might be a different calculus. You might see Justice Kelly, if he were to win his Supreme Court race in April, and that's, you know, certainly no given, he might feel like he was okay to rule on it. You might have a new justice on the Supreme Court who felt like, okay, I'm going to rule on this. But it's just it'd be a different animal if it went to the court through a traditional appeal instead of the expedited appeal, which is supposed to be unusual.
Well, and it wasn't even that they were ruling on the merits of the case itself.
No.
They were ruling on a procedural question of, are we going to take this sort of out of turn or out of the traditional order?
Exactly.
So it's,
they're not ruling on the law. They're ruling on the process, potentially, is one way you could look at it. We don't know, but that's, I think, that'd be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll just have to stay tuned.
Good job again.
Well, Sean Johnston is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you're looking to stay up to date on all of Wisconsin's state politics news, subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you'll get new episodes almost every single week. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find us. It's also available on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.